You are listening to Fanthatrax.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under. Here's your host, Adam O'Brien.
G'day, my name is Gal. This is Little Mullet, and of course, the Fantha from Down Under are here on FanthaTracks.com. Star Wars news in a single file. Here for episode number 59, chatting with Eric Onkenhout, one of my dear buddies from the east side of the United States in Boston, Massachusetts, a huge Star Wars fan, loves his Star Wars novels in particular. We're going to be chatting to him today here about Star Wars and, of course, what he's been up to over the last 12 months, looking into the amazing fandom of the Star Wars universe. Here at Quinlan's Cantina Studios, and we're enjoying a nice balmy day. It's quite a nice day here, actually. There's not too much heat outside today. But I will tell you, it is quite cold on the other end of the line. As Eric has told me, the temperature in Boston is quite chilly, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it's too cold. I'm tired of it. I'm too old. And I don't
want to deal with it no more. Nice. And, of course, welcome to the show, the one, the only, Eric Onkenhout, all the way from, of course, Boston, Massachusetts. Mate, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Really good, mate. Really good. I got to say... Well, Tuesday, as we were talking about temperature before, dropped a little bit at the start of the day, and then it rose to about 108, 110 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, we're on the extreme other end of the spectrum. Because it's like, would you say minus 12 Celsius here?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, yeah.
Which means things are getting frosty like Hoth.
Good weather. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much Hoth. I think I saw a Tauntaun run by yesterday.
Nice. Like, you know what to do if it gets too cold. You just slice it open, don't you?
Yeah, climb inside.
Yeah, just mind the smell. The smell's going to be all fuzzy and who knows what.
That's okay. I didn't shower yet, so that's fine.
And, of course,
climb inside a dead Tauntaun and watch Netflix.
Oh, yeah, Netflix and chill, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to, of course, the Fantha from Down Under. We've returned after a 12-month hiatus here, of course, on Fantha Tracks Radio. Star Wars news in a single file. And, of course, we bring you news from all over the globe here on Fantha Tracks. And here on the Fantha from Down Under, we do like chatting Star Wars in all of its entirety. And, of course, one of the great ones being, of course, we love books. And I know Eric loves Star Wars books.
Yeah, I like Star Wars books. Although I have to admit, I haven't read one in a while. So I'm a little rusty. That's fine.
I think the last book I read was, and it's probably still here, yeah, it was The Light of the Jedi, The High Republic.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. That's one of the last ones I read also. And that was, I love that book.
Good book. And I think, again, it's definitely a series of books I haven't kept up with. There's been just so much other stuff I've been reading, mainly due to my other podcast. I think one of the great things about this mythology, I would say, that George created is, you know, really finding peace with oneself. And also, you know, especially what he's done with Kenobi and Luke to a certain extent, selflessness.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is how do I see this? You're not looking to control every aspect of your life, because if you try to do that, you lose more control. You just kind of got to let things happen. And I think if you do the right things, then the right things will happen back to you.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I experienced.
It's like karma, isn't it?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. And I think that's very much like what we have, even with Anakin, to a certain extent, does that in the series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, because he tried to control everything of his life, and he totally backfired, like, big time. So,
it goes all the way. And which, you know, I've got to say, folks, we have had some news on Fantha Tracks that the new Obi-Wan series, which features Hayden, actually, folks, and I wonder what character he might be playing. I do wonder. It will be in, of course, May this year, apparently. Well, so the report goes anyway. So, I'm very
the Obi-Wan series.
Yeah, I'm really interested in see how this show's going to go.
Yeah, but there is a new Obi-Wan comic book coming out in May.
Ah, so, I wonder where the, maybe that's yeah. that's the actual thing, and maybe the show is later. But what I love about this is that it's the same time as Andor, and there could be some type of crossover.
Yeah, I could see that. Possibly. I mean, it's sort of in that area.
Mm.
But I don't know if you read that book, Kenobi.
Yeah, John Jackson Miller. Yep.
So what I've heard is that I think, I don't know if it's the comic or the show, but it's going to be kind of like him reading some memoirs about his past life or something like that. Which is kind of like what that book was doing, I think, partially too.
Kind of so, like a bookend sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which they've done, Lucasfilm done before with The Mystery of the Blues with Harrison Ford, young Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is great.
Good show.
Yeah. Oh, great show. And I tell you what, where's my Blu-rays, Lucasfilm? Where's the Blu-rays of that great series?
Oh, I know. I mean, they really should put that collection together because that was, not only was that a good show, but it was educational.
It was awesome. I think one of the key things to that one was too is that I guess they did put out a DVD collection of them not too long ago. It was about probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that had a lot of special features actually.
Yeah. That was a big show for a TV series.
What was?
It was basically like a movie. Each episode was like a movie.
It was. Now, what's interesting, out here in Australia, it was never released as a TV show. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I mean, only here it was on for a couple of years. It wasn't on for very long.
So what they did was, it was interesting. They instead did this. They put a number of episodes together. And when they did that, right, they would make it a two-hour show, basically, or a two-hour thing. And it would come out, I remember it was on a Saturday, and it was like a movie matinee.
Oh, nice.
So we'd
That's
all,
a cool idea.
It was, yeah, it would have been about, what was it, 93, 92, something like that. I can't remember. But what was interesting is you'd come home on a Friday night, and we'd check the TV guides, you know, and the days when that's what you did.
Yeah.
And you go, young Indiana Jones, great. And he's going to Gallipoli, or he's going to Turkey, or he's going to somewhere in Europe or France, you know. And so you check it out, and then, you know, there you go. And there was even a guy that played Henry Jones Sr., and, you know, did the whole, yes, my name's Sean Connery, thank you very much. Listen here, Junior. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
like, I remember that.
Yeah, it was great.
That show was on Amazon Prime over here for a while. I'm not sure if it still is, but
I need to check that out on my TV later, I think, see if it's on there. Because, I mean, I would actually rewatch all that.
Yeah. I did watch all of it, I think, and, it was really good. I don't think I watched it much when it was on at the time, but I did now.
Oh, it's just
I'm smarter.
Yeah. All right, the cat's out of the bag, folks. We know the spoilers have hit for, of course, the new show featuring another Mandalorian. Of course, that is the Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett. Now, I will preface this with saying that yes, I know what happens in the show because it's been spoiled for me, and I have not watched any of it yet. But do know the story, Eric. You've watched it, haven't you?
I have watched it, and like you said, honestly. This past episode, I watched it like right when I woke up on my phone in my bed. Maybe like an hour later, I'm already seeing stuff on Twitter, and I'm like, "Oh my god, can you just keep it to yourself for a little while at least?"
100%. What hurts me is that good friends of ours out there are out there spoiling it less than an hour after it's aired.
Yeah, I don't think they realize what they're saying is spoilery.
Yeah,
I guess. Look, I don't know if they're doing it. I don't think they're doing it to be jerks, but. Just don't say anything, you know?
Yeah, there's a few out there are definite jerks. Well, I will say it because they're putting photos of the spoiler up.
Oh, that's not good. That's wrong.
Especially a certain bounty hunter in the last episode. I'm like, that's the kind of thing that is a straight up spoiler. And they try and say, oh, but you know, if you haven't watched it, stay off social media. Some of us have to work and have contacts on social media we have to use for work, so it's going to pop up no matter what we do.
Yeah. It's definitely hard these days. Like, social media is just like, I think people post things just to be like, I'm the first or whatever.
Yes,
and it's
100%.
You don't have to do that.
You know, it's also a mentality that, it gets down to, you know, who's the first, you know, news outlet or podcast to talk about a certain thing and getting the numbers and like, who cares about that? At the end of the day, we're all fans. We're all only out there to talk about it. You know, you're not... I mean, unless they're actually making huge amounts of money out of a podcast or something like that, I can understand that, and then it's a business, that's fine. But at the end of the day, you're still talking about the same stuff. You know, like, so to me, yeah, I would not spoil something like that within at least 3 days.
Yeah. Or if you're going to post it, if you have to, then post at the top spoilers.
Yeah.
No, don't read ahead.
Give them some type of warning. Yeah, 100%. But so we will preface this, folks. We are now heading into a spoilery territory. So the show is definitely the first four episodes heavily about Boba Fett. And I think one of the key things is that there's been complaints about the last two having little to no Boba Fett in it. But I'm like, he kind of hijacked the last season of The Mandalorian himself anyway.
Yeah, in a way, you could say that. Because everybody flipped out when they saw his ship. Like, oh, it's Boba Fett. So,
yeah. So
that's true.
What are your thoughts on him becoming this sort of, how can we say, he's a crime lord. That's no getting around that. That's what he is. He's a major domo, which is, basically the head of a house.
Japanese term.
Yeah. So Japanese term for basically being the head of a organization, head of a house.
Yeah.
Another term would be daimyo, which is the lord. So he's basically the head, and then he's got all of these people under him. And, same as what the likes of Jabba would have been. So he's now up against the Hutts. He's up against all this area. Now, this goes back to the Kevin J. Anderson anthologies that he did. So the Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales of the Bounty Hunters as well. Those were great because they were very episodic in their own right. Now, this feels like somewhat of a reimagining of that.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've read the War of the Bounty Hunters crossover.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place a few years before the TV show, but I think there's some ripple effects from that comic book that are you've seen in this series also.
Hello, I'm Dennis Lawson, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
This reimagining of him, had the Tusken Raiders, the Sand People, basically bringing him out and him finding his ways. It was kind of a bit like Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, so get back to like what I think about Boba Fett being a crime lord.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why does he want to be that? Why?
Yes.
Like, why does he care? Why does he care about Tatooine? He's got nothing but bad memories there.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It's like, why not just separate yourself from that whole thing?
Yeah, is it about money? Like, is it about credits? Like, I don't understand. Because to me, he's not about that. He seems to be about finding balance and honor. There's a certain that he's always had that, where it's, he's quite, what was the word, trying to find, civility, maybe even, in such a place. Because he's got Fennec Shand as his... offside, like Bib Fortuna with Jabba, she's going to be the one that lays down all the rules,
I kind of see her as more like a, because Bib Fortuna was kind of an idiot.
Oh, yeah, more clearly.
but I think she's more kind of like almost as equal,
Oh, 100%. And can I just say, Ming-Na, amazing, talent by herself, she can do anything. Action, comedy, drama.
Yes.
She was one of the best elements of Stargate Universe when that was around about 12 years ago. Great show and one that should have continued, To this day, they're still trying to get the next season of Stargate off the ground, which we should hear news about soon. But she seems to just get better and better. Like, she picks different roles all the time and is always able to, I think, pull off exciting, character choices.
So Boba Fett is Michael Corleone.
Yep.
I think she's like the consigliere kind of.
Oh yeah, like Robert Duvall's character. Very much so. Yes.
That guy.
Oh yeah, she's the biz. she's obviously the one that's going to be saying, "Look, Michael, we can't do that," or Michael, if we do this, it's going to cost us this amount of money. Yeah, this is very much the Godfather. I totally went past that, and I shouldn't have because. Guess what's sitting right here, of course?
Such a good book.
Oh, that book is...
I know the movie gets a lot of praise, and it's an excellent movie, but that book is so good.
Oh, the book is better than the movie. Look, it's amazing. I will say I have now watched the revised cuts by Francis Ford Coppola, And the third movie, you know, I've never been a fan of the third one. I always thought it should be just the first and second one. And now he's actually retitled the third one. And, and it's called The Godfather Coda.
Okay. I don't even think I've ever seen a third one.
You're not missing much. look, I think at the end of the day, it's actually a nice little end. And it's not a really a conclusion as such. It's just the latter years of Michael Corleone. And the person that really comes in that and makes it his own is Andy Garcia. He's always been a fantastic actor.
He's good.
I mean, he literally stole all the scenes he was in Untouchables. Sean Connery was trying, no matter what he did, to steal all the scenes, of course. You know, and Andy Garcia just blew him out of the water because he's such a, I think, a minimalist in some ways. And he, even in his scenes with Al Pacino, was able to take the power in, you know, except for Al Pacino's line, he goes, I get out and they're trying to bring me back in. You know, like he's
nice.
You know?
Yeah, I like that kind of acting. That's a good way to put it because I think that's really how people really are. They're not like so over the top all the time.
Oh, yeah. It's just great. So, but can I say, too, kudos to, of course, Tim, as in Tamara Morrison, who for years has, you know, he's always had good roles. I think he's always put in 110% in everything he does, you know. The first really big movie he did was quite a heavy one when it comes to what it was about. And, you know, that was Once Were Warriors, where he played Jack the Mus, who basically was a guy that went, got drunk at the pubs and then went home and basically abused his family and his wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's quite a heady thing to do. Then he even did a sequel to that where the guy was a reformed abuser who was basically getting better, but he'd broken off his whole family, you know, through all of that. But it was him trying to at least find peace for himself. But it's more like First Blood for New Zealand because it's him taking on all the biker gangs, you know, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he's certainly not that what you would class as an action guy because he's a real proper character actor. He always has been. But, you know, you see him in a lot of the different international stuff now. And up until now, he's always had very, very interesting roles. But Boba Fett, obviously, he played Django. And I think it's interesting he's sort of now gone the full circle where he's playing the son, the genetic son, I guess. And this is definitely different for him.
Yeah. Well, now that you say he's a character actor, I'm thinking, well, I think you need to be to play somebody like Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah, definitely, without a doubt. And I think key to with Boba Fett is that, you know, if it's a change in who he is, because, I mean, look, he's not just wearing the grubby armor. He literally redid his old armor after that last encounter with the Mando and stuff like that. So I think he had a feeling that he was going to, you know, be other than a, you know, bounty hunter. Even Mandalorian himself is starting to change tact because, obviously, too, with having the Darksaber and doing what he's doing, he's been disenfranchised from his own group of Mandalorians.
He seems kind of torn between what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's thinking about the kid and the Darksaber and being a Mandalorian. And I personally don't think he gives a crap about being any Mandalorian.
Nah. I've seen a few rumors that he has force sensitivity, and I think there's something in that.
You think so?
Well, either that or he's just, you know, wants to go and be basically like Boba Fett, not a proper Mandalorian as such. Like he's, and we've already always known he's not a Mandalorian as such. I mean, Mandalorian is who you become. You know, it's by, you know, by being virtuous of what it is to be a Mandalorian. You know, it's you know, you're trained to be and all that sort of stuff. But I think that's the difference there. But, well, let's have a quick chat about. So obviously he came into this with no ship, and now he gets a new one, and it's something I didn't expect. I'm sure you didn't expect an N1 Royal Naboo Starfighter.
Yeah, you know what I liked about that was how they made it kind of like a hot rod.
Yes,
which I think was a cool nod to like George Lucas's love of hot rods and speed and all that.
Oh yeah, right. So, I wonder if it's also because Doug Chang's original concept art was very much like a hot rod.
Oh, could be, yeah. I didn't see that, but that's another thing that, speaking of like Doug Chang, when people were kind of complaining about those mod bikes,
mm-hmm.
the too shiny and stuff, And I actually wrote this in one of my reviews of Fanta Tracks, but I'm like, if Doug Chang approves and he thinks it belongs in Star Wars, then in my opinion, it belongs in Star Wars. Because if anybody knows, it's him.
I mean, he literally created majority of the Star Wars stuff for the prequels, apart from obviously some stuff through, was it? I think he bailed at the end of episode 2 or at least the start of episode 3 off to do his own projects. But I mean, he's had such a footprint on Star Wars ever since, and he came back around the time of the sequel trilogy and, you know, started working on more stuff there. I think, you know, particularly with the N1, it's just such a nice nod to the, you know, the history, you know.
Prequels.
I'm going to say it, folks. I love the X-Wings, always have, but those Naboo ships are just way cooler.
They're just so sleek. I just think they're beautiful ships. The lines are so smooth.
And it's apparently super fast. You know, it's got its own hyperdrive.
The X-Wings are just kind of like thrown together. But those ships are like...
Yeah.
They remind me of like a 1930 like Bugatti or something like that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, I mean... The other ship I liked from that time was General Grievous's Starfighter, which is kind of like looked like a hood ornament.
You know what that ship reminded me of? I haven't seen any confirmation of this, but if you look at like a 68 or a 69 Corvette with a long hood,
and the
driver's way back, kind of looks like that ship to me.
Yeah, because it really is, isn't it? Like he's right at the tail end of the ship. You know, it's an interesting one. I've got to say, too, there was a whole heap of concept stuff that Hasbro put out post-Revenge of the Sith before we'd even talked about Clone Wars. And this was a lot to do with Dark Horse doing a lot of early Darth Vader material and stuff like that. So, and these are some of the things I've been trying to hunt down for years. And, you know, I'm the first one to say I'm a bit of a hoarder of Star Wars stuff, as we probably all are, that are fans.
But been there, done that.
Been there, done that. That's it. And, I mean, I can no longer fit half of it in the house. It's got to the point where I've had to put it all in storage. So, no wonder when I get my own place,
I sold a lot of my stuff.
Oh, idea? Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
You just had to get rid of or just wanted more room?
I kept all my vintage figures and all my vintage toys, but anything new, I sold it all.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't have one ounce of regret because I'm like, what am I going to do with it?
Collecting
dust.
Well, that's it. You know, look, I mean, I always thought that I'm going to do one of two things. I'm going to get a place that has a spare room big enough to display it all.
Yeah.
That's something I've always wanted to do. It's been a passion of mine.
Me too.
But I don't really collect the new stuff. It just doesn't have the same quality for starters. They don't make them like they used to. Even the Black Series has been very hit and miss is probably the word, but... Back in those days, Hasbro was pumping out these, you know, repaints of some great vehicles. So the Jedi Starfighter became the Sith Interceptor. And the model of that was just, it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
Nice.
And that was when it was still on the legacy scale of figures, so the 3¾ or whatever it was, before they went to that new mission scale or whatever it is that they've got now, which is just meh.
I have no idea.
It's smaller, but it's basically 5-point articulation instead of whatever it is, eight or 10.
Yeah.
Not the same quality, man. You know, it's different. But I do like those ones. So the other one I wanted to get was the V-Wing, which is the you barely see it in Revenge of the Sith, but you see it at the end when Vader's body's being transported back to the medical bay in Coruscant.
The V-Wing.
Yeah, the clone's V-Wing, yeah.
Yeah, they said V-Wing, I'm like, huh? I know there's a lot of people out there that are really into, like, the articulation and the quality of the figure and stuff like that, but I'm just not one of them.
Yeah. It's, you know, at the end of the day, you go for what you're after. But, I mean, these days I'm more into collecting the books and all that sort of stuff, you know, and, I just don't have the time. Particularly now invested in martial arts and stuff like that. But it's an interesting time. We got that, we got this new ship, and then we also have a visit from a certain Jedi. We see a temple, and this is in episode 6, folks, if you haven't seen it yet, and we have both Ahsoka Tano, we have Grogu, and of course we have Jedi Master Luke Skywalker in this episode.
Yes, we do. So I wrote my review today for Fanta Tracks on this episode, and I was basically like, I think I said that. I don't know where to start. There's so much to talk about.
Go for it, man. Whatever you want to talk about with it.
My review was like 1,450 words, something like that. I just was like, I just can't stop. But yeah. First of all, the CGI was incredible.
Yeah, they really nailed
what
it
was
there.
During the rescue in the Mandalorian episode, which was, it was okay.
Yeah.
But this was 1,000 times better. Like, there was times where I'm like, is that an actor? Is that like CGI? What is that? Like, who is that? Is that Sebastian Stan? No, I don't think so. I'm like, oh my God, it's so good.
It looks so real.
Anyway.
And even the lip movements, which were the problem I had with the rescue one, it just looked natural. It looks like Mark. It really does look like him.
Even not even just the face, but like the body movements. Mm. Like, was some of it a real person? Because that looks so freaking real to me.
Oh, they'd have to have had somebody motion capture or something like that.
Yeah, because there was a scene where like Luke was talking to Grogu and Grogu's on the ground behind him, and Luke just kind of like turns around to face him, and it was such a cool like movement. I'm like, how did they do that? That's what I'm thinking about. I don't even care what he's saying. I'm like, how did they do that? You know,
it
blows my mind.
It seems natural too. That's the thing, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I couldn't even tell if it was an actor or not. But anyway.
What are your thoughts on the temple? There. Is this temple, the one we see burnt down, or is it just a number of the temples?
Do I think that was the one that was destroyed?
Yep, the Kylo.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Where it is, I'm not sure. I have a couple of ideas, but I'm probably wrong.
It's got to be Yavin. Surely it's got to be Yavin.
Yavin? No, I didn't even think it was Yavin. Honestly, it didn't cross my mind. I know it was Yavin in the books, in the Legends books, right? The Academy was on Yavin.
It was, yeah.
I don't think it was Yavin. That was kind of like a jungle planet.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Oh, it's very, very... because it was the moon of Yavin, wasn't it? Yavin was the gas giant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this planet is kind of like hilly, sort of like mountainous, kind of like grassy plains. So my thought was, the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking I'm wrong. But you remember Tython, right? Where they brought Grogu and he was kidnapped by the Dust Troopers.
Oh, the original Jedi
Troopers.
Planet. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. But that planet was kind of, I think, more rocky. But it could have been another part of that planet.
Could be, yeah.
To add to that, like two episodes after that is when Luke comes and rescues Grogu. So I'm thinking, were they close to Tython and Luke was nearby and he took Grogu, so maybe he was on Tython at the same time or in that area? Who the heck knows?
You know, it was interesting. One of the biggest story points from the sequel trilogy, which was sort of touched on, I think, in the Dawl and Kinsley books, was the fact that the temple in Ukto has a symbol of the prime Jedi. So there was only meant to be...
Yeah.
No Sith at the
on
time.
The floor.
Yeah, on the floor. But you look at the temples and stuff like that, it looks exactly what Luke is building. It's very similar to what they had, you know, it's these dome structures and stuff like that.
That's another thing. Like, I think he's been to Ukto or whatever it's called, and he just kind of modeled his academy on those huts.
Yeah, 100%. So I think that's definitely a big part of it. The other thing is interesting is that, we never really, I mean, that was, that if... That's a natural point of storytelling, is to explore that in the third movie. But JJ came along and, you know, wanted to reboot what the other storyteller did. You know, I honestly think there's two big egos between storytellers there, you know, whether it's Chris Terrio and Ryan. Yeah. Ryan's script was just so solid. You know, I think it was a solid, natural, Empire-like, very Empire-like, actually, when you think about it, progression of the story. And... I think, you know, there was definitely a bit of humbling on JJ's part when it came in and goes, well, and so the Emperor came back. Like that's basically it. Like, that's how dumb and stupid it is to a certain point. I think Palpatine definitely needed to be involved in that third movie, but not the way they did it. I still think there must have been an extrapolation on what the Jedi were really building up to. And again, I don't think the Jedi philosophy was fulfilled even in that.
Yeah, no. You know, I just... During the snowstorm we had over here last Saturday, I spent the day watching the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started watching episode 7, and I'm like, this is a good movie, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them in a long time. But, you know, I enjoy them, but they're definitely some flaws in as far as the story goes. And
yeah.
Even, like, some of the editing. It's like, what?
Oh, with all three of them, to be honest. Like, all three of them could have been edited to a different way, you know? It's almost, in some ways, too much plot going on, you know? I think even George had, I mean, they weren't short movies with George either, but the plots were streamlined enough that you got a lot out of it still.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think George was very efficient as far as story goes. He only put what needed to be in the story, to, in the movie to tell the story.
Yeah, no fluff.
Whereas, yeah, exactly. Whereas, I really liked The Rise of Skywalker, and I still do, but it was definitely like a lot packed into that movie, and the pace was really fast, which I kind of like, actually.
But I mean, you compare that to, say, Rogue One, which is a breakneck pace, has the most abrupt ending. It's still to this day, and it feels more like Star Wars than anything I've seen since Return of the Jedi. That really is Star Wars Rogue One, and New Hope is Rogue Two. Like, it's streamless, like, it's seamless the way that one was put out. I think it was that sort of energy.
Yeah, I think as far as the sequel goes, I think there was maybe too many heads at the table.
Yes.
Trying to tell a story instead of, like, having one director for all three, one writer for all three. Yep. It was just too much inconsistency.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, blame anybody, but I just don't think really any of them got what Star Wars is about.
Completely missed what it is.
Having said that, I mean, Rey is one of my favorite characters. I really hope they can continue some of their character stories, because I think there's more to be told after those movies.
Oh, same. Like Finn, most underrated character in there. He's such a fantastic character. And the idea that we're getting it from the Stormtrooper's point of view, finally. Like, that's something that was hinted at in the expanded universe for years, was Stormtroopers and what they've been through, Crimson Empire, for example, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Finn, he's just a fun character too. Like, he's experiencing things like we are. And, the fact that he could handle a lightsaber, you know, and that in the first movie, I knew he had force sensitivity. And then, there's a hint of it in Rise of Skywalker that was apparently meant to be fully looked at, but they just didn't have time.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's just like they had so many ideas going. They didn't know where to kind of like they didn't have an outline. They just kind of threw everything in there.
Oh, 100%.
And you know, they had a direction for Finn, and they just kind of like abandoned it and focused on Rey, which is fine.
I think she had a great, I think actually Rey's story is great. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. The fact that even being a Palpatine made sense. That's actually, if there's something that JJ wrapped up well, it was that. The only thing I disagree with is how they wrapped up Kylo. To me, Ben Solo should have been revealed earlier in the film and had his chance to really battle against his own emotions early, not late. It was, to me, too late to see him battling. Now, here's the reason why I say that is because you could really push the Knights of Ren then, because he'd be facing them for three quarters of the movie. They are all force sensitive like him.
You remember the throne battle scene in The Last Jedi where kind of like it looked like he was going to turn good, but he didn't really. So you think at that point he should have stayed good?
I think so. Either that or at the start of Rise of Skywalker. Maybe he, after meeting Palpatine goes, what the hell's, what have I been doing? And then that's the tipping point. And then maybe he, and they somehow is put in amongst the rebels, and they're like, the hell's this guy doing? Let's kill him, whatever it is. But then he realizes, you know, sees his mum and says, look, you know, I screwed up, you know?
Yeah.
And then him leading along with Rey would have been the two Skywalker kids, basically, or the Solo Skywalker kids. That would have been a better story because it's basically fulfilling the potential of those two lines.
Yeah, and I think they could have also had Rey, Finn, and Poe together more. And there's a way to incorporate the older actors and without being worried that they're going to take over the story. If they did it right, I don't think that would have happened. Because they did that in other series and movies where, like, they're bringing in a new generation and that wasn't a problem. 100%. Like Cobra Kai. Do you watch Cobra Kai?
Oh, I do. Yeah, it's a great series.
So you're having, like, you know, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence, but they're not, like, you know, you get them and then you get their kids and mm-hmm. it's equal.
Yeah, it's 50, a good 50. Balance. 100%. It's a great balance, that show, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, they're progressively bringing in, you know, some of the older elements in these sequels. So Chosen Taguchi's back, obviously Saito's nephew, who's the villain. And he had the best entry where he's like, he really hated Daniel still. And he's like,
yeah,
we'll spar, you know, let's go, you know, let's get into it, you know. And he's, and then...
And- He's got that face, too, where he just does not look happy.
No, he's able to keep it right up to the point, does the pressure point thing on Daniel. Daniel's like, what the hell did you just do to me? He goes, secret Miyagi technique. And he's like, what is it? He goes, pressure points. But I love it. He goes, you should have seen your face.
It's such a good series. I mean, that series, like, it started on YouTube, and it was kind of like a joke, and everybody's like, oh, my God, it's so good.
He's great. Now, Yuji Okamoto is his name, folks. He's a restaurateur currently, as well as obviously still an actor. He, I think, owns places in Seattle and maybe one in L.A. as well. But what's great about him is he's putting a lot of work into producing some movies now, too. One of them called The Paper Tigers, which is a great martial arts action comedy, and it has Master Ken in it. Now, I don't know if you've seen the YouTube series. There's a guy who goes, hey, I'm Master Ken of Maridute. See, she's just like this. He's the blonde-haired guy with a big, big fat mustache who's basically taking off Chuck Norris. It's hilarious. Like and he goes, now, this is my secret anti-gun technique. So you'll have somebody pointing a gun, and he goes, whoop. It does Three Stooges style stuff. He's hilarious. Yes. I could just imagine what it was like for Yuji and the guys on the set of this movie, because on Paper Tigers, it's about a group of guys who were martial arts sensations in their teen years, and it fast forwards to our age in their mid-40s to 50s, where the master's been killed in some type of murder. And the guys haven't seen each other for years. Now they're overweight, not as fit, getting back into it, and they have to solve the murder of their master. But it is men at our age trying to get fit and trying to be just as good martial artists as they were when they were like 16, 17. And it is hilarious.
Sounds funny.
Oh, it is.
The thought of me trying to do that, I think I would break my back.
It's great. But with Yuji has he's one of the producers on the movie, but he also has a great scenes in the movie where the three guys go to a restaurant, and Yuji's basically the owner of the restaurant. He goes, did you know who this is? It's the Paper Tigers. I'll go and talk to him. And he's a big fan of the three guys when they were kids. So, he's done fantastic. And I dare say, now that Terry Silver's back, we're going to see Mike Barnes, the bad boy of karate, in season 5.
Wait, who's that now?
Now, if you've seen Karate Kid 3, Terry Silver, who comes and takes over Cobra Kai, he hires a young kid called Mike Barnes. He says, right, you got to go over there, go to LaRusso and make him sign the thing that he'll do the competition. And he goes, you are going to sign this. Come on. And he's played by the soap opera actor Sean Kanan.
Oh, okay. So I need to watch that one again, the third one. I haven't seen that one in a while.
It's a lot of people don't forget that there's 3, 4, and 5. So there's Karate Kid 3. Yeah, there's 5. There's the next Karate Kid with Mr. Miyagi's back in that one with Hilary Swank takes Hilary over Swank. From Daniel.
If they bring back Hilary Swank, I'm going to, like, pass out.
People got to remember, she was a good boxer in a movie years ago. I think it was $1 Million Baby, was it, with Clint Eastwood. Yeah. So she can fight. She's really good.
And that took place in Boston, too, by the way.
Oh, wow. There you go. Nice.
Yeah. Pretty sure.
So you got that, and then you've got the Jackie Chan Karate Kid movie. It's Will Smith's kid, and it's Jackie Chan is the mentor, and I think they're in Shanghai or Beijing, if I remember right. Look, it's definitely outside of this mythology of Karate Kid, but Jackie Chan does is just as good as he always does. But the real star of the show, outside of all that, is the teacher. Oh, he's not a star. He doesn't do a lot of the kung fu in it. But Yu Ronggong, who plays the bad sensei, if you like, the other kids.
He's always one of those.
Yeah. He is an amazing martial artist who for years has always played a lot of the heavies, but he had a hero role years ago in a movie called The Iron Monkey, which is one of the best kung fu.
Oh, yeah.
Great I've picture. Seen that one. It's a great one, isn't it? Yeah. So him
is
and
Jet Li in that?
Donnie Yen.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah.
So here's how it works, though. It is actually a prequel to the Jet Li movies called Once Upon a Time in China 1, 2, and 3. And so this is set about 20, 25 years before, and it's about about the father, Wong Kei Ying, played by Donnie Yen, going to a place where they've got some crime happening, and there's a Robin Hood-like figure going out and who's stealing from the rich, given to the poor, and that is Iron Monkey.
Oh, cool.
It's got some solid action. But anyway, yeah, it's not a bad movie, but it's definitely not something that would be part of this Karate Kid series. Although, if you watch the Cobra Kai producer's titles, you'll see a name there, you know.
Yeah.
Will Smith.
Isn't it funny how we went from the sequel trilogy to Iron Monkey in about 5 minutes?
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
There's always been calls that Andor is going to be the best of the shows coming out.
Yeah, you know, that's the one I think I know the least amount about.
Same here.
You never hear anything about that one.
Same. I think, look, we're going to get something that's very much a military show, very much a 007 sort of thing, which I'm actually really looking forward to. This could be good.
Well, we know that it's a prequel to Rogue One, right?
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah.
I would think, it's going to be taking place, I think, around the time of, like, the early seasons of Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, definitely. We have a good chance of seeing Hera Syndulla in this one.
Ooh, yeah, very cool.
And you know what, folks? Yeah. I know they like to cast actors over the top of voice actors, but, folks, I'm going to say one thing. There is a lady out there, and she knows that not only could she do this, she could do it very well. She's also the voice of the character. We're talking about the amazing Vanessa Marshall, folks. That's right.
Yeah.
Vanessa is a great actor as well as a voice actor, and I think, really embodies what it is to be Hera Syndulla, not just the voice. So Lucasfilm, hire this lady to play the main role. I mean, she's already doing the voice in Rogue One anyway.
True. They should bring her in. And they could also bring in, they cast Sabine for the Ahsoka show.
Yeah.
And they could use her too, as well.
Why not?
I mean it's not Tia Sakaar, but they could, bring her back.
You know, I think the thing is you've got so many potentials for carryover characters from other parts of the, other eras. Why not do it?
Yeah, they can even use Freddie Prinze Jr. for Kanan, no? Do you think that would work?
I would. Why not?
Maybe he's too old. I don't know.
Here's somebody, Freddie Prinze, who is perfect for the role. I mean, knowing Lucasfilm, they probably won't. They'll probably go another way. But
yeah,
he is... a real-to-life Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. A lot of people don't know that.
Nice.
Pretty sure he's a black belt from what I read. I know he's been involved in martial arts for years, and, jiu-jitsu was his thing. And he was doing it before it got really famous. So the guy is fit. He's certainly got the look. I mean, he could do it. Why not?
And you know what else? He was in the Punky Brewster reboot.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And I watched that series too, but it already got canceled.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, look, he's doing a lot of stuff online now too. Like he's doing, there was a cooking show he was doing from what I remember, but he's always been doing particularly with the Rebels cast, a lot of Dungeons and Dragons and Star Wars role-playing games and stuff like that online on YouTube. And you get to watch Vanessa and the team and, of course, him doing those games. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You don't hear much about Taylor Gray these days.
Yeah, I haven't heard for a little while, hey.
No, me neither. I think he's been to some conventions in England.
Yeah.
But other than that, I haven't heard anything.
No, as I say, like, we only really see all these guys out there once COVID all, you know, clears up at least a little bit more so we can all get back out to these events. It's crazy because, I mean, it's funny now that, you know, for years we've been, you know, stuck in our houses. Now they've just let the cat out of the bag with Omicron and we're everywhere.
It seems to be getting a little better over here right now. I think that latest surge is calming down.
Yeah.
It's not completely gone away. I was actually supposed to go to Galaxy's Edge at Disney World back on January like 9th or 10th, but I had to cancel that trip. And I think it's unlikely that I'm going to go to Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim in May. I've actually already requested a refund on my tickets.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move. I think it's a bit premature to be getting out there and amongst such large crowds with COVID still being such a big thing.
It's just that even if it's like better, like I don't want to deal with like the stress of like traveling and wearing a mask and getting tested and all that stuff. And I'm like, traveling is already stressful. I don't want to add on top of
that. Oh, yeah, 100%. The funny thing out here is that it was about 2 weeks of lockdown when you get back, but now it's been halved to 5 days.
Hi, this is John Morton from The Empire Strikes Back, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So with Star Wars, folks, obviously there's quite a lot going on. We've got the High Republic with characters like Marchion Roe and all these others, which start in the Light of the Jedi, and it's kind of like Star Wars galaxy getting raided by Vikings. You know, it's an interesting galaxy. It's 200 years before the original, series. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm actually a little behind on the books. The last book I read for the High Republic, I think was, I read The Light of the Jedi, and I read, I think it's called Into the Dark. And there was another book by Justina Ireland that came out right around the same time. I haven't read anything from like Out of the Shadows or anything that came out last summer. So I'm a little behind on the books, but I'm up to date on the comic books because they're just easier and quicker to read. So, I mean, I get spoiled on the books, but I don't care too much about book spoilers too much. But I'm liking it so far. I can kind of see, I'm starting to see how the Jedi change their kind of philosophy from very, almost like knights, actual knights, and how they got to be in The Phantom Menace, where they're just very strict and kind of like, I don't know. I'm trying to keep it clean. But they're just like, I don't know, just kind of jerks, Phantom Menace. But
they were
kind of see it start going that way.
They were going very much like a religious order. And I think that's the thing, and a stagnant one, you know, one that wasn't willing to grow. And everything else is changing and becoming, you know, more modern, I guess, around them. And that's half the reason that they're, as much as Palpatine and the Sith are responsible for the demise, they're also responsible to some degree.
Yeah, and I think the Jedi and the High Republic haven't dealt with what they're dealing with before, so they're just kind of like learning as they go also, because they've been kind of like getting kind of complacent.
Yes.
They really haven't had any Sith, they haven't had any problems, everything's peachy keen. Now all of a sudden you got these Mad Max looking guys and they're like blowing everything up and just being terrorists everywhere. They got this kind of weapon that's kind of like the Ysela Mary from Heir to the Empire, where it's kind of like drains people of their force power or something. They just like, they don't know what to do. And a lot, it's affecting a lot of them very negatively.
It certainly is. And I like the fact that we got, you know, the same level of expertise behind this as the films. People designing these things so that, you know, the group of the writers can just basically pick up the drawings or whatever it is and just run with it.
Speaking of the writers, I think I noticed, I don't know if it's me, but it seems like Lucasfilm or whoever is speaking the writers, but they're sticking with like the same writers for the books and the same writers for the comic books. And every once in a while, they'll sprinkle in someone new.
Yeah.
But I think the good thing about that is it does help keep the stories consistent, because they can refer back to like something they wrote a year or two before.
Yeah, it doesn't jump around then.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. So, mate, folks, I've only read Light of the Jedi, so I've only really read the starter. So I'm interested to see what you folks out there think of it. I mean, comment below on wherever you're seeing this shared, and let us know your feelings on this. You know, does this stack up against the New Jedi Order, which was sort of the equal to this in terms of how bigger a book event it was? You know, it's different from, say, the Aftermath, which was only three books, you know. Like, this is a much, much larger sort of scale. And it's, I'm actually, you know, huge kudos to Lucasfilm for, and Lucas Books, and taking a chance on doing a larger area. And I think they're sort of redefining definitely that period, which we've never known about before.
So I think the difference between those two series is, like, the New Jedi Order had, like, so many different writers, and I don't really think any of them really collaborated that closely. But these five are just kind of like, they're always bouncing things off each other back and forth. So, and from what I heard, the books have been really good. So.
Yeah, I mean, you got some great writers in there, you know. We got Charles Sewell, you know, who's
Charles Sewell, Kevin Scott.
Oh, unbelievable! Yeah. Kevin Scott's Claudia Gray, Justin Ireland, you know, like they're all fantastic, you know. And I think that's the thing it's different.
Yeah, I met Charles Sewell once. I got his autograph.
Nice, was nice guy.
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. He was at a local comic shop and he signed my Lando Calrissian trade paperback.
Oh, that's awesome. That's mad.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and folks,
doesn't remember that, but
I still got them here, actually, by the way, the original Lando.
Oh, yeah.
Introductions by Mr. Hidalgo himself. And the book is by L. Neil Smith. Yeah, I have to read that one through again, the Mind Harper Sharu and all that sort of stuff. I haven't read them since the 80s. So looking forward to getting those.
There is a Lando series supposedly coming too, so.
And so there should. That version of the Millennium Falcon is my favorite yet.
Is it really?
Because it has a coffee machine. I'm a coffee addict, so I love it.
Yeah. Get that front cockpit thingy and the different radar dish.
Looks good as.
Kept it clean anyway.
Oh, it does, you know. And it got.
I'm like Han.
Han let it go.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Oh, my God. There you go, all the way. Well, folks, I hope you've had a nice little slice of your monthly Fantha from Down Under. It's been amazing to catch up with my dear friend Eric. And you can find Eric at Fantha Tracks too now.
Whenever there's a series going on, I write, I'm not the only one, but there's a bunch of us that contribute reviews to different TV shows. I think I started with The Bad Batch, and then I did like one whole one for Star Wars Visions, and then Book of Boba Fett.
It's always fun to check out that stuff too. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed it, and obviously too. Where can we find your socials, mate, so we can people can check out your stuff?
I'm on Twitter, at Eric Oakenhout. I'm on Facebook, same. Instagram, Oki75. That was my name in high school.
Nice, nice. So, folks, go on and check out what Eric's doing, and obviously follow his many reviews and stuff like that. You're always looking at great books and stuff like that in particular. I find that your choices are always the best.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. It's good to have you back, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Fantha from Down Under. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free Fantha Tracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. You can also find me over at Fandom Podcast Network, where I host The Lethal Mullet, Making Treks with Mark Newbold, and Mulleted Kilt with Greg Robertson. That's right, Darth Elvis. And you can find me on Twitter at TheLethalMullet. You can comment, like, share any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, and Mark Daniel, and of course Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember to tune in to our FanthaTracks news show, Good Morning Tatooine, live Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. This is Star Wars news in a single file. May the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.